getting there on time just isn't good enough. Traffic and weather on the 10s with Wills and Snyder in the morning on WTAM 1100, Cleveland's News Radio.
What a week we have had in savings. Smart life ways to save all week using tech around the home, around your life to make things easier. Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News, Will's Ways to Save. Okay, we've made it to Friday. You've got some tech to help me out working. Explain this to me.
You can't see me right now, Bill, but I am shaking. I am nervous.
Uh-oh.
And I think there is a very good chance this deal will crash the website. Already so much momentum.
Warning. All right.
Please direct all hate email directly to me. This is not Bill's fault. I can't control stock. I am going to talk to you right now about a laptop that is not only smart and touchscreen and Intel powered, but how to score one for under $180. Oh, with Windows.
Wow. Okay.
So this is one of those deals that doesn't necessarily come along twice. If you are right now struggling to consider the laptop or the iPad or the tablet, I'm going to find you a fully functional laptop for under the price of really any tablet on the market and half the price of an iPad. This is the Duo 11. It's a new vision, really well-made laptop. It's a premium Windows 10 device, fully loaded, solid state drive, Intel processor, full HD display. It has four USBs. So Bill, I just want to point out, it has the same number of ports that the $3,000 MacBook Pro has.
Good grief. Okay.
Other thing about this, just comparing it to the MacBook Pro, just because purely it's I can't believe we found this for $180.
Yeah.
It has a front and rear facing camera. The MacBook Pro does not. Is it as fast as the MacBook Pro? No. But it's $180. It'll play music, games. You can watch whatever it is you want on it. You have a really solid processor. The memory is expandable. The battery life is 6 hours. Intel, Windows, $180. If you were to just buy Windows on its own, you're looking at $200. I found the whole laptop for $180.
Wow. What a deal. And you're right. This may be sold out quickly, so I'd do a couple of clicks and see it right now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If anyone's wondering why are we seeing the price drop, there was a spelling error on the box, and are liquidating stock as quickly as possible because they have to restock stores.
I'm willing to put up with a spelling error for that kind of thing. Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News, Will's Ways to Save. Watch him there this morning, WTAM.com. Keyword save. You can see the deal. Matt, thanks much. Have a great weekend, too.
Awesome.
News around here is Baker Mayfield. And we got a Buckeye, too. Sports, Mike Snyder.
Yes, indeed we do. And really, when you listen to John Dorsey last night, it was not even close in his mind to choose Baker Mayfield as the number one pick in the draft. And when you look at it, the way I hear it from the Browns general manager, it's a lot of the intangibles as to why Mayfield is the guy.
And this is a guy that has earned everything he has ever had from high school to college, and now up here. He is a winner. He's competitive. He really is.
And he has gotten it done on the field. The question about is size. That, to me, is a concern. Now, there have been comparisons of Baker to Johnny Manziel. Baker's had some off-the-field issues. Some of those things I'm really not too concerned with. I am over, though, his physical size to participate week in, week out in the NFL. But when asked about comparisons to Johnny, here's what Baker said.
Johnny and a few completely different people. Nothing against him, but what I've been able to do is be upfront and honest about who I am during these meetings. And I'm confident that I've showed that with this coaching staff and with the management and throughout this process. So for me, moving forward, it's just being myself. I'm not going to go out and try and prove I'm not Johnny. I'm going to be myself, and to me, that's going to take care of the rest.
Now, with the fourth pick, the Browns took cornerback Denzel Ward right out of their own backyard. Went to Nordonia High, played at Ohio State. Considered the top cover corner in the draft, Denzel says.
Yeah, it's an honor because I feel like they're definitely trusting in me to kind of help be on the wave of turning the system around. And I look forward to that challenge. I look forward to any challenge that people place on me, and I feel like I'm going to end out on top.
Well, they need a cornerback, and you can only take one guy. Although, boy, Bradley Chubb, they passed on him. Denver just right behind them, jumped in and took the defensive end from North Carolina State. Four quarterbacks in the top 10. Darnold went to the Jets at 3. Allen to the Bills at 7. Rosen to the Cards at 10. Ravens traded into the first round, took Lamar Jackson out of Louisville. Indians and the Mariners at Progressive Field.
Indians trailing Seattle 5-4 here in the ninth. Lindor now getting a big lead, not held. The payoff, swing and a miss. Struck him out, ball game's over, and Seattle has had the Indians' number so far this season. Mariners 5, Indians 4.
Series continues tonight at 7:10. You can hear the game on 100.7 WMMS. Corey Kluber on the mound. We'll have the Cavs and Pacers. Cavs seeking a closeout tonight at 8. You can hear that right here. NBA says LeBron should have been called for a goaltend the other night. Okay, Cavs win 98-97. Hey, Celtics and Bucks headed to a Game 7 in Boston tomorrow as Milwaukee wins last night 97-86. Giannis had 31. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio, WTAM 11.
Through the truce and peace treaty,
this meeting is going on right now. It's a press conference between the leaders of North and South Korea.
And we are going to.
And Bill Zimper joins me on News Radio WTAM 1100. Bill, good morning. This has played out through the night. Historic meeting is literally North walked across the line to the South, right?
Yeah, a lot of optics involved in this one, Bill, as Kim Jong-un walked across the demarcation line to join Moon Jae-in in these talks. And it was interesting, after a little handshaking and smiling going on there, Kim Jong-un invited Moon Jae-in to step across the line to North Korea.
Right.
And he did that. A lot of optics involved here. The two held some morning meetings, then broke for lunch. Kim Jong-un went back across to the north side to have lunch, then back for another symbolic ceremony. They added to a tree that was planted in 1953 as a sign of peace between the two countries, soil coming from both North and South Korea. Then afternoon talks, and just a short time ago, Bill, they did release their formal statement on these talks. And maybe the biggest part of it, Moon Jae-in says that North Korea and South Korea have agreed to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. Also, he says they'll hold talks on establishing a peace treaty. They agreed to urgently resolve humanitarian issues of divided families between North and South Korea and some other things as well. But I think the biggest part out of this is that Moon Jae-in says they will denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. We'll see what happens from here.
Huge headline and happening from here also. This lays some groundwork literally for Trump to meet with him, right?
Absolutely. And this was the key part, the key precursor to any meeting with President Trump. So he will get a full report from Moon Jae-in and our diplomats in South Korea on what this meeting was all about and the prospects for a Trump and Kim meeting. And everything, the way it's unfolding so far, looks like it really is opening the door for that to occur.
Historic time as we speak. Bill Zimper on it. Bill, thanks. Have a good weekend.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
Thank you. For folks who don't know, I went to Paris last week. Mm-hmm. And that sounds glamorous, except we landed on Thursday morning and left on Saturday morning. So we were there for about 48 hours. He's a very impressive man and very engaging. You could see it, obviously, with the president. They differ on a lot of issues. And in the president of France, Macron, in his address to Congress, made that kind of clear, that there are differences on globalism and multilateralism, and whether it's dealing with Syria and staying engaged in Syria, or climate change, whatever, mm-hmm. Or the Iran deal. But on a personal level, they get along, and I can understand it. He is a very charming man.
Militarily, we have worked with him in Syria recently. These are two democracies, although we have our differences at times. Obviously, a lot of history between the two countries, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And that was one of the points that he made, is that, you know, you can have momentary ups or downs. But the Marquis de Lafayette was the first great ally in France, the first great ally of the colonialist George Washington in the Revolutionary War. And as he puts it very openly, the U.S. came to the rescue of France in World Wars One and Two. So it is really a friendship, a bond that goes back through the whole history of our country.
Fox News Sunday, so many things will play out, including just trouble staffing. What is it about this VA job? The latest Dr. Jackson evidently pulling out. They've come after Toby Cosgrove a couple times at Cleveland Clinic to run this VA. It is a huge bureaucracy.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
It's the second biggest agency in the federal government after the Pentagon, 370,000 employees. And forget the question, although that, and I think there's going to be a lot of soul-searching as to whether or not Admiral Jackson, the president's personal doctor, was dealt with fairly or not here with a lot of these unverified accusations.
Right.
But there were always questions about his training, his qualifications, given the fact that he'd never really operated a big agency. Yes, he's a great doctor, but you know, you want one person to perform surgery, you want another person to run a huge government bureaucracy.
Right. Good point. Yeah. All right. It'll all play out Sunday. That and more of the news of the week on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Bill.
How much of your legal work was handled by Michael Cohen?
Well, as a percentage of my overall legal work, a tiny, tiny little fraction. He represents me, like with this crazy Stormy Daniels deal, he represented me. From what I understand, they're looking at his businesses. And I'm not involved, and I've been told I'm not involved. Our Justice Department, which I try and stay away from, but at some point, I won't.
President Trump on the phone with Fox and Friends yesterday. Interesting conversation. Our Michael Bauer chimes in on this. Everybody listening closely, including attorneys and maybe some prosecutors, too?
Yeah, in fact, so closely that a New York judge has appointed an independent official in the criminal inquiry against Trump and Cohen. This is the special master that we've been talking about. It could have been a taint team or a special master that's supposed to go over all of the information and determine whether there is attorney-client privilege. There was one named yesterday, and that was because of what President Trump said on Fox News. There was sort of this tension in the courtroom between Michael Cohen's attorneys, President Trump's attorneys, both looking to get access to and look over that information first to determine the attorney-client privilege. And what you saw was, because the president said that stuff, the courtroom and the judge said, well, if there's very little information that the president has worked with on a legal basis with Michael Cohen, then there shouldn't be too much stuff to go over in regards to the attorney-client privilege.
He's got the normally presidents have the bully pulpit. He's got the bully Twitter. He's reaching out all the time. And of course, you know, this call yesterday, including Twitter, that's all a public record that everybody's going to look at very carefully, right?
It was used in court yesterday. So yeah, that's exactly it. And the special master Barbara Jones is going to be going over this information over the next week or so here, and this is pretty important. This is a decision that was made based upon the president's phone call to Fox and Friends, already something that was going to be a discussion, and then what had to happen was Cohen's lawyers had to back off of their determination that should be this team looking over everything by saying, no, we'll give in to just this individual based upon what the president said on Fox and Friends.
Interesting. Michael Bauer on it. Michael, thanks, partner.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Traveling and the cost. Airfare. Ann McDermott joins me at editor at faircompare.com. Hi, Ann. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, but looks like we are trending a bit higher. I know gas is more if I'm going to drive. Airfares are going up as well.
This has more to do with summer is on the way. And a date to keep in mind for everybody is May 17th, give or take a day, depending on where you live and where you're going, because that's the start of the pre-summer season, which is a jump. Fares are going to jump about 20% or more for travel on weekends and weekdays, and that'll continue through about June 20th to 22nd. And if you thought I was going to say, and then things will be nice and lower, no, because that is when the peak summer pricing kicks in, about June 23rd, and that will continue through August 27th. And then the good news is starting around August 28th and continuing up through Christmas is the cheaper fall season where you can really find some bargains.
It looks like air business is good. I mean, every flight seems to be full. I think airlines have been adjusting their business model to make the most they can, and we're seeing that as well with the fares. I mean, supply and demand?
Yes, and they have become very, very good at capacity control. They know, down to very tiny numbers, exactly how many of us want to fly, where we want to go, and, you know, everything is so computerized these days. That's why planes are filled.
So run the dates by me again. May 17th means what?
Starting around May 17th, that is the pre-summer season, and prices are going to go up. So if you can fly before then, you'll find some bargains, some real bargains. This pre-summer season continues through about June 20th, 22nd, and then the higher peak summer pricing kicks in, which will continue through late August.
Good info to keep in mind is your price and airfare. Ann McDermott at faircompare.com. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Big, huge movie opened up last night, Avengers Infinity War. If I got this right, for Marvel fans, the wait has felt like an infinity. 10 years, 18 superhero films. We have finally made it to this point. Kevin Carr joins me from FatGuysAtTheMovies.com. All right, how is it?
Well, like you said, it's the culmination of 10 years. And, you know, just as the Avengers just took these handful of characters and became a massive hit, this is like the Avengers on steroids or super steroids, because they've added so many more characters to the universe and they have so many more heroes and they all cram them in the movie and it fits organically, unlike the sequel to the Avengers, Age of Ultron, which felt crowded and disjointed at times. The reason this fits is because it's really Thanos' movie, and Thanos is the Mad Titan who wants to basically control the whole of space and time with the Infinity Gauntlet, where he's searching for these celestial stones that give him control. And he's a villain because he wants to wipe out half the universe in this weird genocidal pact, but he's not a villain in his own mind, and that's where the villain is good. And a movie is only as good as its villain, and he does a great job in it, where, of course, you've got the Avengers, everyone from the Avengers to the Guardians of the Galaxy and everything in between trying to stop him. So we pair up the characters with different people, and we see him interacting with people we've never seen him interact with before, and it spreads around the screen time, so everyone gets their chance to be in the spotlight, but it's not any one hero's journey, and that's kind of what makes it a unique movie. But it's also very heavy and significant, and it's put together very well by the Russo brothers.
Yeah, I was going to say, our Cleveland Russo brothers got to work on this thing. Without giving away too much, I also have read a couple things, even America's Beard, there's some other stuff about just little side stories, I guess, throughout, if you pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, you got to realize they have dozens of characters in this movie, so they give just little teases here and there for each one. I mean, when you look at it from the hero's perspective, it's almost like a series of vignettes and almost webisodes of the characters, but it all fits together in this cohesive 2.5-hour movie because it's about this journey of Thanos trying to get this Infinity Gauntlet, you know, to wipe out half of the universe.
Disney's made a fortune on this thing since they bought Marvel for like $4 billion back in 2009, and it just continues to build and build. Okay, huge. Avengers Infinity War, it's out, and you like it.
I do, yeah, and it comes on the 1-2 punch. It's the second part of the 1-2 punch from Black Panther, which is still in the theaters and in the top 10.
Kevin Carr, FatGuysTheMovies.com. Check his website out before you get out and check out anything anytime. Kevin, thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Well, maybe you do, but no, we shouldn't say that. Scooter's take on why the Browns did what they did, and Snyder tries to correct him. Terry Pluto was not worthy of the air, and I don't want to insult you by bringing it up when we're talking to you, because you are an award-winning columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dieter, Cleveland.com, graduate Benedictine, 8-time sports writer of the year, Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dieter, Cleveland.com. Hi, Terry.
Hello, Mr. Wills.
Okay, let me start this way. You have scribbled, Mayfield is a huge gamble, but you did like Ward at 4.
Yes, there we go. We can start with something positive. I do like Denzel Ward at 4.
All right.
And because, well, the easy thing to say, Bradley Chubb, you know, the pass rusher, if you could find a cornerback who could shut down the top receiver, that's just as important in my mind as getting to the opposing quarterback. And Ward, look, he's one of the fastest guys in the draft. Ohio State just turns out those good defensive backs. And, you know, when I thought about that one, I could see it right away. I had just a much tougher time getting around to Baker Mayfield.
Well, I'll tell you, Terry, when I was hearing the buzz yesterday, I really thought it was just kind of buzz. I listened to Dorsey and Hugh talk about it last night. What struck me was that they're really talking about – what I heard a lot was that he proved it on the field collegiately, but they love his intangibles. They really do.
Yes, I mean, they're counting on that. The other thing, though, Mike, is Dorsey at one point rattled off about 6 different stats that are right out of the analytics, the dreaded analytics that everybody hates, playbook, you know, how fast he gets rid of the ball and his accuracy and all these other things. Ball's not batted down at the line of scrimmage. And truthfully, if Sashi Brown had made this pick, if you think the reaction's been bad now, it would have been horrendous. Said, oh, it's just a bean counter, you know, stat pick. But he is the darling of the analytics crowd, is Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, the numbers are there. I know what you're talking about, his release. He didn't have balls batted down. In fact, fewer than any of the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
How this is going to play out, it's going to be defining, I think, for Dorsey. I know, Terry, I think like you, that seeing Roethlisberger, Flacco, these big quarterbacks come in here in November, December, I wanted a guy like that. So Baker will try to overcome that, but it's rough in the NFL at that height. It is.
And just sort of the way he plays, too, rolling around and everything. I mean, this is not Johnny Manziel Jr. I don't think it's fair to go that way.
I agree.
It's really not. But he's just it's the hardest position to play in team sport, and you're taking a guy whose, you know, basic physical qualities, other than being a very accurate passer, that's a very important thing, don't match up with how the better quarterbacks play. So I'll say this, Don Dorsey's got a lot of guts taking him.
You know, Dorsey starts again tonight. Here's a guy who's out of football, doesn't have a job at the beginning of the year, and he's running the whole thing. I mean, everybody's got eyes on what John Dorsey is doing, including tonight. Yep. As they start round two, right, Terry?
Exactly. By the way, he's got to get himself a left tackle pretty soon. You know, your running backs, there's a bunch of different things to do, but all the more reason you want to get that good young left tackle, because you better protect this kid soon, because you want to start developing that left tackle too. Just like the quarterback may not have to play right away, but you know and I know that at some point, probably this season, Baker Mayfield's going to play. Well, I don't feel real good about going into that with Sean Coleman at left tackle.
No, that absolutely. They've got to identify that. And just, I wanted to follow up with that. You have Tyrod Taylor, but now you get a guy like Mayfield, first overall pick. You're right, Terry. They lose some games. You can already feel it. And I know they're going to try to stay away from it, but the reality is the year goes along, and Mayfield with his personality, he's going to want to be out there.
I think that's very true. Whereas, suppose they had taken Darnold or Josh Allen, there's kind of easier thing to do, I think, to keep him on the bench and keep him waiting. A big challenge is going to be for Hugh Jackson on this too, because while Jackson was up there, in fact, saying, you know, he's one of the best college quarterbacks he's ever seen or something like that, he said, it's not a Hugh Jackson type of quarterback. He likes the bigger guy that can throw downfield, and so hopefully Todd Haley or somebody, you better draw up an offense that fits this kid. And the same thing with Tyrod Taylor, too. That's one thing I will say, there's some consistency. They both have some of the same attributes.
True.
They're mobile and they're accurate, but you better not just say, I'm just going to have him stay in the pocket and throw it on field like DeShone Kizer did.
Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter. He'll be scribbling and trying to figure things out throughout the day as they start round two tonight. Good stuff. Thanks, Terry.
Okay, guys.
I saw a couple of things on social media last night from Progressive Field. So let me ask you first, and I think it was up on the scoreboard when the Indians announced the draft. What was your take?
Yeah, you know, this has been 2 days in a row, you know, because of that big scoreboard. But you never get the pulse of Cleveland and what's going on outside of Progressive Field. And probably about 5 minutes after Baker Mayfield was picked by the Browns flashed it up on the scoreboard. And I got to tell you, it didn't go over very well. It was a lot of boos, and it wasn't for Baker. It was just, I think people were surprised. I know even some of the guys even the players kind of walked out and looked at me and they go, really? Baker Mayfield? So Baker will be down there today with the Browns and throwing out the first pitch. So it'll be interesting to see the reaction 24 hours later. But it didn't go over really well to start things off last night.
Well, let's hope he throws a strike tonight.
I don't think we got to worry about him throwing a strike from 60 feet and 60 inches. Nobody will be bearing down on it.
Well, he is accurate. That's one of the, and that was one of the big reasons they selected him. Yeah, what a surprise it was, Andre. As we look at the Tribe right now, they really haven't gotten it all going. But boy, Andre, I look at the standings. They're 13-10 in first place in the division.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Camino just said that, you know, throughout spring training that, you know, the division may be the best thing the Indians have going for them. And that Puerto Rico trip seemed to zap everything out of Minnesota. They haven't won since. I know they played the Yankees, but they didn't have any luck with Tampa Bay. And you're right. The Indians right now, they're kind of treading water at this point in time, is the way I look at it. But they're at a good place. You know, last night it was nice to finally see the offense battle back. Because for so many of these games early in the season, it seems like when they've gotten down early, They haven't been able to get back in the game. So I thought that was a good sign. But of course, like much like in life, you battle back, and then you get a guy that goes on the DL in a position that you would go to, and he wasn't there last night, and Andrew Miller, and you kind of lose it late. But I thought it was a good sign that the offense bounced back and at least fought last night.
What is the vibe you're getting regarding Andrew Miller?
For the most part, if there was a 15-day DL, he wouldn't have gone on the DL. Because it's 10 days, he went through this a couple years ago when he played for the Orioles. They're hoping that he'll be back right at the 10-day deadline of the 10 days. It's just, you know, it's not a big-time worry, but I think because of the way they use him, they want to be, you know, this may be good in the long run, to be honest, because of the workload that he gets. I think they want to take advantage of the 10 days and hope when he's back in 10 days that they don't have to worry about this issue anymore.
The Mariners in town. They've actually been pretty tough on the Tribe so far, haven't they?
They really have. Well, you know, you look at their roster, they've got some good starting pitching for the most part. They've got some all-stars in their lineup that can hit the ball. And they have been a thorn in the side. The guy on the mound last night, I don't care where you would have played. We could have played anywhere. He was darn near unhittable. And when you know that about him going in. And like I said, they've got some big-time hitters. And I think getting D. Gordon has changed their lineup a little bit. It gives them speed at the top of the lineup and exactly what those big boppers in the middle of their lineup could use.
Any flashbacks with the Cubbies in there for a couple nights for the guys?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think the players wanted to admit it early on. I know, you know, when the series started, but they're human beings. I think when you see those uniforms on the field and you hear their fans, yeah. People that I really never hated until 2 years ago. I think after the second game and talking to some of the guys, I think it absolutely there was a little bit of a, oh yeah, I remember what happened. You know, not that long ago that happened. They came above all the guys.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got Seattle.
I don't think it's ever going to go away, Bill.
No.
To be honest, I think it's always going to be there.
Until you win it, it ain't going to go away.
No.
Exactly. Seattle for the weekend and Texas for a couple too, right?
Yeah, good part of the schedule. I know that, you know, we've talked about Seattle being tough, but, you know, they've gotten past Yonsei King Felix, and now we've seen their two best starting pitchers. Mm. So three games against that, and then Texas comes in, and they're struggling, and I believe we wake up three games up in first place to the Central, and you try to build upon that as you go forward.
I know it's early. I'm going to have to go back and review the tape. I think we started the conversation with you saying Nick Camino was correct about something, but I want to go back and check that before I can confirm that or call that fake news. So,
well, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Just go ahead and erase that and act like it never happened.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We'll take care of you. Don't worry, pal. Andre Knott, Fox Sports, Sports Time Ohio. Watch you tonight. See you, bud.
Take care, buddy.
Thank you. Right now I've got he did say something, I thought, at the beginning about Camino being correct. And it's early.
It's early.
But I want to go back. We'll delete that.
We'll review that, yes.
We'll get Rosemary Woods on it. Good. Sports brought to you by Smiley One this morning at 24/7 Sports. Following the Browns in the draft is our Fred Greetham, Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. Morning, Fred.
Hey, good morning, guys.
WTAM.com, keyword Browns. We linked up to the piece that Fred just posted. Okay, guys, Dorsey talked about the process. And I guess, Fred, that process led us to Baker Mayfield last night.
Yeah, it did. I mean, in the 29 years or so I've been covering the Browns draft, it's never went the way I thought. But I will say I think they kept this as close to the vest as anyone I've ever seen because he really didn't come on the scene until, well, even the last 24 hours because there was not a lot of talk about Mayfield. It was Darnold, and Allen. And then – yesterday it all started really coming together, the buzz about Mayfield, and sure enough, when they called the name, that's what they're doing. And they said they made that decision some time ago.
I was going to say, Fred, that Dorsey indicated last night that he's made up his mind a while ago, but he did keep it under wraps. Nobody really knew till the commissioner announced it, did they?
No, and, you know, as far as, when you look at some of the things, a lot of what they're saying makes sense. I mean, when Scott McClellan was brought in from the Redskins, he had publicly said that Mayfield was his guy. And we know before Dorsey was hired by the Browns, he had been very high on Mayfield and saw six games of his early on. And then what was ironic to me was they made a point to say the new regime wasn't going to go under analytics, maybe use 15% of it. And Pro Football Focus was the biggest analytics that the former Browns regime used. And they had him not only as the number one quarterback, they had him as the number one available player in the draft. And so they got an analytics quarterback that hits all the charts, and yet they were going from the strict football sense. So it is interesting. And, you know, when I was thinking about it last night, after it all settled down, when you think about it, they kept talking about winning. When Ohio State, watch all their games, Mayfield kind of lit up the Buckeyes, much to our dismay. But Ohio State defense ate up Sam Darnold. So when you kind of look at some of those things, that kind of makes sense. You know, when they're looking at it in the big games in the winter, they feel that Mayfield is the guy that's going to take the Browns to where they want him to go.
Well, he was the top passing quarterback in college football. They go 34-6 in his time at Oklahoma. So he did it on the field. The big question mark for me, Fred, really, is the size. Can he overcome that in the NFL and hold up to it?
Yeah, they went out of their way in the press conference. You know, he talked about that he was number one in least passes batted down. Again, that's college, and that's in the Big 12. And he emphasized that they remeasured his hands, and they were, you know, he came in at 9 1/4 at the combine, and the Browns measured him 3 different times at 9 6/8, and which is 9 3/4 in my math classes. But as far as when that's being said and done, they feel and emphasize that he checked the boxes. So, yeah. Is that gonna be it? I think the biggest thing holding people back was the comparison to Johnny Manziel, and you know, and he just said as you were playing there that he said, "Look, I'm not him, and you'll get to know me, and we'll see."
Denzel Ward, the pick. Ironically, you mentioned the Ohio State game, considered by most to be the best cover corner in this draft, right?
Yeah, and I had him. We talked about the other day. Had him post on TM.com that Ward could be one of the targets at 4. I thought it would be more on a trade down. But, yeah, they felt he was the best defensive player in the draft. And, obviously, Bradley Chubb was there, and they took Ward over him.
Fred Greatham, 24/7 Sports. Follow him on Twitter. Another busy night tonight with round 2. Browns start there again, right, with the first pick.
Have the first one. Right, yeah, they have 3 in the second round, right, Bill.
Check out more WTAM.com on the Browns page. A lot of great pictures and video. Fred, great job on that, and thanks for the thanks for the time this morning.
All right. Always a pleasure, guys. We'll see what happens today.
National Drug Take-Back Day. We've been playing some public service announcements, as they're called as well. 14th District Congressman Dave Joyce on this. It is a cause near and dear, I know, to his heart as well, this horrible opiate epidemic we have. And Congressman Joyce, kind enough to join me for a few minutes this morning. Morning, sir.
Morning, Bill. Thank you very much for the time.
Absolutely. Let's get right into this. This thing touches every family, every demographic, every zip code, it seems like, Congressman.
Absolutely, Bill. I mean, I sat down here at a former prosecutor, or we call ourselves a recovering prosecutor, a bipartisan group, talking about what we could do in the big picture. This was 3 years ago. And across the board, everybody, no matter where in the country, all came back to opioids. And that's when I saw this was something I wanted to make one of my main focuses, to help get emergency relief funding for the epidemic.
I know you've also spent some time with the White House, the administration. Kellyanne Conway, I think, has been the point person for the president on this as well.
Yes, absolutely. Last week, I was I've been communicating with her, but just last week, she hosted something here for members, and first with the Senate, and then over in the House. So we could, because she's leading the task force, and I talked to her about, you know, how we can work together so we can make the administration and the House and Senate work towards this and speed up the process to combat the opioid epidemic, and you know, work out, help them roll out their campaign, because as you mentioned, I mean, the crisis is everywhere. It affects family and friends. I don't know anybody, when you go into a setting and start talking about it, who doesn't come up afterwards and talk about somebody in their family or friend or at work who's been touched.
Medicine, medication you have around the house, let's make sure it doesn't get in the wrong hands, I guess. And that's really a part of what this promotion is for tomorrow, conversation, but also physically getting rid of these things properly.
Yes, you know, and thank you for spending some time on this, because I think it's really important. I didn't realize how bad it was, Bill. And then when I'm talking to real estate agents, they tell me that people come into, like, open houses, and, you know, they have to follow them around because they'll go upstairs and hit the medicine cabinet in people's homes just trying to steal it.
Good grief.
So, yeah, and then, you know, the other flip side of it, if you think you're just flushing it down the toilet, is going to get rid of it. Unfortunately, that gets in the system, and we really don't clean all the, if everybody does it, we really don't clean that drugs out of our drinking water or out of our potable water supplies, and especially if you're out there in a septic field that runs off in a creek or somewhere else. So this is a safe, effective way to do it. You know, I'm honored that all these police departments and hospital systems have all joined together to do it. And just in our in my district, but there's other parts that they can do it, because you can find the location closest to you by going to takebackday.dea.gov. Again, takebackday.dea.gov. Put in the address and you'll find a close location where you can take any unwanted or unused medication that you want to clean out the drawer and get rid of it, because unfortunate statistic is a lot of the abuse starts not necessarily with the person who had the prescription, but somebody who came in and started taking and using the prescription that was left there and basically stealing from either their parents or their family or their homeowner.
Takebackday.dea.gov, right?
Takebackday.dea.gov.
Yeah, I've got it in front of me right now. It's easy to use because you punch in your zip code, and right there it'll come up. You know, different communities are doing it different ways, but at least you'll know where to go in your community, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And most of the police departments, your sheriff's departments, are going to have it. A few hospital systems like Lake West will have it set up. But you know, you find the police department and take back what you get, and they'll be able to process it for you in a safe and professional manner.
Hey, two quick things. I follow you on Twitter. Congressman Joyce is a good follow. He's always out and about. You've been out at several business meetings. What's your sense on the economy? And then what are you doing giving back $155,000?
Yeah. Well, you know, since I've got here, I'm one who likes to lead by example. And my 25 years as prosecutor, every year I gave back money. And the first year I did it, the sheriff came up to me and said, "What are you, stupid? You know, they're not going to give you that much money next year." I said, "Well, hopefully I won't need it next year either." So, and I think it's important here to do the same thing. So far, I've given up $650,000 back to the Treasury, because as a hawk on the Budget Committee, I'm out there in appropriations. I'm out there pushing people to use less. You know, try to make work 90% of what you had the year before, because this is the only town I've ever been in where if you don't get 103% of what you got the year before, they call it, they say they're getting cut. So I've been fighting for that. But the good part is about the tax cut. I believe that the working folks, you know, at home, the hardworking taxpayers, they can spend their money better than bureaucrats here in D.C. And that helps stimulate the economy, and that's helped people put people back to work. And I can tell you, Bill, the most impressive thing that I've seen in the economy so far is that every manufacturer I'm going to see, on top of touting the tax cuts and saying how everybody in their workforce is happy that their withholdings are lower, they can't find enough people. The business is picking up, and they can't find enough people to do the job. So
right.
That's a great sign that the economy is improving. But we need to get a workforce that's ready for them so we can continue to bring back the companies to our area in northeastern Ohio, and to continue to be the manufacturing center that it needs to be.
Well said. Congressman Dave Joyce, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on, Bill, and go Browns.
Go Browns is right. Yeah, we didn't have time to get your take on Baker Mayfield. We'll do that next time. Again, the website, takebackday.dea.gov. It's real easy to use. You just type in your zip code, and it'll show you where you take medications to be properly disposed of. Mike Snyder alongside. Your Morning Cabs update brought to you by Huntington Bank, one of a bank that believes in looking out for its customers. Welcome to Huntington. Game 6 at Indianapolis tonight. Jim Jones and John Michael will call it. They'll tip it off at 8, and Jim is with us this morning. Hi, Jim.
Morning, guys.
You know, guys, I was thinking this morning, this first round, not for just the Cavs, but for a few other teams, it's almost like March Madness. Just survive. Win and move on, right? Right, Jim? Just survive and get through it.
Yeah, it is. You know, Mike and I talked about it toward the end of the season, how competitive from 3 all the way down to 8, 9, and 10 was this particular season, because a lot of those young teams that have been struggling for the last 3 or 4 years have now matured and grown up, and they've become very, very competitive.
We are seeing that. Jim, what has been the difference in the Cavs defensively as you've observed them here?
Well, what they've done, guys, is on both ends of the floor, we've been able to control tempo and pace of the game because we've been getting the defensive rebounds, and we've been dictating that by the defensive possessions. And by doing that, then we have the option to run or play 5-on-5. What they've done, they've made the Pacers play 5-on-5. And every once in a while they'll make a mistake, and then they get out and run on us, and they get to the rim, and you can see their athleticism. That was our greatest fear, that we would be able to match up with them as far as their athleticism and the ability to get in the open floor. You got to remember that this Pacer team ended the season on 11-2 run. From March 11th to the end of the season, they had beaten Miami, a playoff team. They had beaten the Warriors twice, and they beat Philly. Yeah, this is a very good team. And this is what you get when 4 and 5 play, because they're usually very close and similar. And if you look at 6 of the 11 categories, talking about field goal percentage, free throws, three-point percentages, in 6 and 8 of the 11 categories, we're close. It's very close. So this was going to be a close series. We understood their strength was their athleticism. We understood their second strength was the size of their front line. So we were able to minimize all of those things.
And, of course, the Cavaliers have LeBron James. You made an interesting comment to me the other night after he scored the 44. In fact, the last two home games, he's averaging 45 a game. But you made a comment that, hey, even though he needs more help from his teammates, but you go back to the old Bulls days, Michael Jordan would go get those 40-point games this time of year, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, and you can't minimize that. I think what people look at, they look at the traditional formula, which, you know, was really two guys, one guy in the 50s, and then it became you got to have two. Then everybody start going for the big three. But really, all you need is one super player. And off of him, you know, you can get a lot of things done. And that's what we're doing. You know, we've got one great super player that no one has ever been able to match up with. And Ty Lue and his people have had some questions answered. They know how to play him and how to position him to take advantage of him to help with the guys who are struggling. And the only reason they're struggling, guys, if you really think about it, is they're not getting a lot of minutes, so they're not getting a real good rhythm and feel. And the reason is that because over the last 2.5 games, Ty Lue has decided to go with his older veteran players, and they're more efficient. They make less mistakes. They have a better feel for each other, and they have a better rhythm.
Jim Jones and John Michael will call it 8 o'clock tip from Indy tonight on News Radio WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers. We've got Nick Camino at the Cavs watch party at the Q starting at 6. Jim, thanks, partner.
You're welcome, guys.
More about that game right now. Every Friday, Jensen Lewis checks in, a former Tribe pitcher. You see him on Fox Sports, of course, with the pre and post, and sometimes even during the game with some great analysis, breaking down the analytics of baseball. Jensen in this morning for Falls Motor City on WTAM 1100. Morning, pal.
Hey, good morning, boys.
5-4 loss last night. Take us through that one first.
Yeah, it was a great comeback, guys. Give a lot of credit to James Paxton. He was just mowing down with good old number one most of the night. And then just seems his kryptonite is Yonder Alonso in this season. Big two-run homer to right center field. I had said if you got season tickets over there in right center, get ready to be peppered, because when the wind starts blowing out, it starts getting warmer. That's where the jet stream is at Progressive Field. But great to see him yet again, another homer off a lefty. That was the big rub when he was signed, that he just wasn't able to hit lefties very well. So encouraging signs there. And I think also Jason Kipnis, too, a couple of great ABs last night, RBI double. And then obviously with the end of the bullpen there, we see without Andrew Miller, some of these guys, and Nick Goody, the latest victim last night, there's continuing auditions to try and get big outs.
Jensen, talk a little bit about Andrew Miller. Legs are so important to a pitcher. They want to be careful here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's nice. I think it's a best-case scenario for what it could have been, and this is something that Miller has had before. He said he could probably be ready in 3 to 4 days, but understanding how early we are in this season, you want to get that 100% taken care of. So with the 10-day DL as opposed to the 15-day DL in the past, it's more conducive to be able to get a guy up like Jeff Beliveau, who's been great in Columbus, and then also giving other guys opportunities. You know, Tyler Olson's been fantastic. I think Goody is a guy that can bounce back. But some of these guys are going to have to step up. We knew that Brian Shaw being lost to free agency was going to be a big hole, and now these guys are going to have to step up in Miller's absence.
Jensen, this team is yet to really get it going. We've talked about how great the starting pitching has been overall. I look at the standings this morning. They're 13-10. They've got a 3-game lead. The team most believe can contend with them in the Central. Minnesota's lost 7 in a row. I'm feeling pretty good today.
If you were to tell me that, Snide, pretty much here at the end of April, and knowing that the rotation against the division has a 1.13 ERA, I feel pretty comfortable that we aren't going to break a sweat anytime soon about the Twins. And they've lost 7 in a row themselves. They got a lot of problems and issues to deal with on their own.
But the Indians know that, that this is a marathon. That's what they've trained for. And I think once you see May, some of these guys like Encarnacion, Kipnis has always hit well during that month. I think you'll see the offense start to take off.
I hear Baker Mayfield going to throw out the first pitch tonight.
I believe so.
Yeah, I'm interested to see his mechanics. You know, 6 foot guy. We'll see if he's got leverage, you know. But, hey, I know that you guys will be all over what's going on there. And we'll see. I have faith in John Dorsey. He hasn't done anything yet to give me a moment of pause. You got to trust him in this first draft.
It's all about the process.
It's all about the process.
Play out. All right. We'll see you tonight. Is that right?
You got it, 6:30, and I'll be on the game broadcast with Matt, Rick, and Andre for the fourth, fifth, and sixth innings.
I will mark it. Thank you, pal.
All right, thank you, guys.
Jensen Lewis on your Tribe on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Catch the game tonight, Indians-Mariners, 100.7 WMMS. First pitch, 7:10.